You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Remember, if you gamble, use your game sense. Stay within your limits. Go to gamesense.ab.ca.
And Greg, I'm actually surprised there wasn't an article out from Greg Wyshynski today listing all the freakish injuries we've had in NHL history.
I mean, we just cover them one by one. I think it's better for SEO that way. But I got to say that, like, you know, at the very least, these guys have never been more relatable. You know, who among us hasn't, you know, cut themselves on broken glass or scalded their skin with boiling water? I think it's hockey players. They're just like you and me, Jason.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Dude, it is funny, though. Like, hey, I've never... Like, I burnt myself, you know, on cooking. You know, you burn your finger, touch a stove stupidly or something. But, you know, knock on wood, I've never had a significant burn. I actually just read Aaron Volpatti's book about the burns. He had, like, 40% of his body second-degree burns, and he still ended up going to the NHL. It's crazy. But
goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's actually a really good book. You might want to read it. You should check it out. It's a pretty interesting story. But you look at some of these teams that are, you know, some guys are hot off the ice for all the wrong reasons. There are some teams on the ice that are pretty hot. The Colorado Avalanche off to a great start. The Minnesota Wild and the Dallas Stars, like the Central Division right now, those top three teams, man, it's looking like it's going to be an absolute slugfest down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, it also looks like if you're the, you know, the Utah Mammoth or the Winnipeg Jets or if the Chicago Blackhawks decide to kind of hang around for a bit longer, your entry point is going to be the wild card. It's pretty much guaranteed right now based on how good the top three in the division are. But, you know, the Jesper Wallstedt of it all for the Minnesota Wild, I think, is a very exciting development for them. You know, it's funny. I was just having a discussion with somebody about NFL quarterbacks, being a Jets fan and obviously looking forward to whoever will be our next franchise guy. And the idea of how long an NFL team should allow their next franchise quarterback to percolate, kind of hold the clipboard. And you know, in some cases like Jordan Love in Green Bay, it worked out great because he didn't have to come in right away. And in other cases, guys have to come in right away and they get whacked. And I've always been very impressed and interested in seeing how patient the Wild have been with Wallstedt, because other teams might have rushed a kid with that much talent up a little bit sooner to take over the crease.
Yeah.
They were more methodical with it, and I think it's really paid off. But, you know, the team that you mentioned before, Dallas, I mean, that's, like you said, when they get healthy, if they get healthy, and start getting some of these guys back. I mean, you know, Matt Duchesne's played four games for them, for example. That's such an interesting collection of players. And you know, so far they've won the bet that moving off of Pete DeBoer didn't mean a dip in success in the regular season. With Glenn Gullitzen behind the bench, and one assumes that'll just continue to be the case. And they're, you know, for as good as Colorado is, you've got Dallas waiting in the weeds in that division.
Greg, with Craig Berube kind of rattling the cage a little bit in Toronto by sitting a couple of his better players, Domi and Dakota Joshua, do you see any issues with that? Is that, you know, something that's kind of good for the morale of the team, that nobody's safe if you're not playing the way you should?
Well, you know it. I mean, like, you're trying to do anything you can to light a fire under that team right now, considering the way that the standings look and the way that the trajectory of that season's gone. I mean, my God, I was looking at the prospective betting on who's going to make the playoffs, and to see the yes answer for the Maple Leafs be plus money at this point is kind of jarring when you consider how regular season success came so naturally to them. It's such a weird team. Obviously, like we were talking about at the start of the conversation, you know, injuries have befallen them in a pretty significant way too, not only missing Austin Matthews for a number of games, but this Brandon Carlo situation now where he just can't seem to get healthy. Is seriously impacting a blue line that had also been missing Chris Tanev for a good period of time. So, you know, it's interesting that some of the names I just mentioned, when it comes to what I think has been one of their big problems this year, which is their compete level, you throw some of those guys in the lineup and maybe that kind of reverses course. But with the injuries being what they are and with the season having gone the way it's gone, I think Berube at this point just trying to throw darts at the dartboard and see what sticks, because nothing's really kind of functioning as it should right now for the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, well, there's a few teams like that. And, you know, injury, like, you know, the Maple Leafs themselves, but also specifically Austin Matthews, Greg. Like, you're not even a point, yeah. He's not even a point of game player. And there's a few games I've watched. And now, before he got injured the last time, he had 4 goals in 5 games, was looking good. But there's a few games I've watched here. He doesn't even look like a threat.
Yeah, I mean, and his health situation has been so murky and mysterious, I think, in the last 2 seasons. It's hard to really put a finger on, you know, what's ailing him and what needs to correct and all that stuff. But let's not forget, too, that from a point production standpoint, the Toronto Maple Leafs right now have the 25th best power play in the league. And this is where we come back to the biggest issue with this team, and the one that they aren't going to really be able to address in a sufficient way, which is the loss of Mitch Marner. And for all the things that Mitch didn't do in the postseason, he did everything in the regular season. He was a 200-foot player. He was a 100-point winger, which is, you know, not, you know, those don't grow on trees. And he certainly contributed to them on special teams as well. So when you start to see some of the point totals on players like Matthews take a dip significantly, and you look at where their power play is right now, it's not really a shock to see the impact losing Marner had on their regular season. And, you know, I don't know if you guys noticed, but Matias Maccelli, not the replacement for Mitch Marner, in case anybody was hoping that might be the situation.
Yeah, shocking. No, but it wasn't just him. It was also Nick Roy. And I remember people trying to say, yeah, we got rid of Mitch Marner, but look at all the guys we replaced. I'm like, yeah, exactly. I will take quality over quantity most times. Especially when the quality's a pretty good player. They miss Mitch Marner, I don't think there's any question, but their goaltending numbers aren't even close. And I don't think that has to do much with Mitch Marner, no offense to Mitch, but
that's also injuries too, because they're missing Wall for a good period of the season as well. So, and Stolarz is an interesting one, because Anthony Stolarz and the Calgary Flames have something in common, which is that for the majority of last season, we got to hear people wax poetic about how beautiful and wonderful and great these things are. And then when both things turned south this year, nary a peep from some of the people that were overpraising Stolarz and the Calgary Flames. It's funny how that works.
Yeah, it's true. What about the Panthers, Greg? Like, Barkov and Tkachuk, we knew it was going to be tough without them. But, you know, they got 115 games lost. You got Lostarinen out, you know, Gadjovic, lots of guys. Pretty much every line has lost a guy. You throw Kulikov in. And I just think over time, like, the Barkov and Tkachuk injuries, they just catch up with you, because you can have guys play 10 or 15 games where maybe they can be a top six winger or top six center, but you can't do it for 40 games. Are you concerned at all about the Panthers and where they're at?
I mean, not in particularly, because I if you look at the way that the East is stacked up right now, despite the fact that the Bruins are punching well above their weight at this point, I still think Florida, when they get Tkachuk back, is going to be able to make a real run up the standings. I think they're going to be better than whoever is lingering in the wild card, and it wouldn't surprise me to see them finish as high as third in the Atlantic when all is said and done. They've done what they need to do, which is tread water. I mean, they're like one game over 500. I think they'd probably like to have a few more points at this point in the season. But when you consider the injuries that they've dealt with, not only in losing those big guys when it comes to Barkov and Tkachuk, but like you said, some of the supporting cast has been hurt. They're not getting great performances from some people that they maybe thought were going to contribute a little bit more offensively in a time of need, i.e. Sam Bennett. But, you know, our next NHL Awards watch, where we talk to the actual voters, comes out on Thursday. And I'm going to be really interested to see if there is a push for Brad Marchand to get some Hart Trophy love, because although this team is not in a playoff spot right now, the way that he's stepped up as a top line player for them and supplanted the offense that's not on the roster right now in Tkachuk and Barkov has been nothing short of spectacular.
Greg, I'd like to get your insight on the Canadian Olympic roster. Tom Wilson scored 2 goals, got an assist against the Islanders yesterday. Do you think someone like that kind of plays his way onto the roster, or even with the U.S. roster, is there any surprises that you see there?
Well, as an American, I think Tom is far too good to be on the Canadian roster. I would like you guys to populate that team with as much fourth liners as possible. Maybe a few backup goalies, try to make this thing as easy as possible for us. I think the thing about the, I'll speak on the U.S. team for a second, which is the philosophical debate that has plagued USA hockey for at least the last two Olympics that we sent NHL players. It rages on, which is, do you want to send guys that are pure offensive stars that maybe don't have a 200-foot game like other guys do? Or do you want to populate your roster with, you know, Vincent Trocheks and Brock Nelsons and players like that? And so I feel like this is going to be every time we send NHL players, USA Hockey is going to have this debate on whether, you know, Cole Caulfield should make it, other players like that should make it. And it makes me mental because it's not as if they didn't have enough 200-foot players in overtime against Canada and Four Nations. So they didn't have anybody to put the puck in the net against Jordan Binnington. And so I'm hoping that USA Hockey does err on the side of offense and populate the roster with those types of players. But I think at the end of the day, knowing Bill Guerin, he'll probably still err on the side of having veteran 200-foot guys instead of the young bucks with the goal-scoring prowess. But I'll say this about Canada. Like, I think at this point, I'd be really surprised if both Bedard and Celebrini don't make it. I think both those guys have played their way out of the roster right now.
Yeah, I'd be surprised, especially when you got a 14-man roster. Like, I look at Team USA, like, Tage Thompson's on my team. It's not even a discussion for me personally, yeah. Right? Like, he's big, he scores a lot of goals. Like, it's not like Patrice Bergeron's one of those elite players who's really good defensively, you know, and pretty good offensively. He's never been an elite player offensively. So that's why I always chuckle when people say two-way. Two-way is the polite way of saying they're not great offensively, so we call him a two-way player. But I look at the States and I'm like, just bring your best players and let them figure it out. If they want to win, they'll know that in a certain time, guess what? Like, they're not stupid. They know when to pinch and when not to. Like, I'm with you. Like, it seems kind of odd to me. Like, the fact that Kyle Connor was a healthy scratch and that I'm still stunned by that in the Four Nations game. Like, I didn't get it.
It's insane to get, like, what, 35 seconds of an injured Matt Tkachuk in that game. Like, that's why Kyle Connor got scratched, essentially. But, yeah, I'm with you. You know, again, knowing the brain trust behind this team, I'm sure it'll go the opposite direction from having the Kyle Connors and Cole Caulfields and, you know, Clayton Keller types on this roster, Logan Cooley, like players like that. We'll see where it lies. I mean, it's a good problem to have for the Americans, having too much offensive talent from which to choose. It's not always been like that for my nation, so I can't complain too much. But on the Tage Thompson front, I mean, also keep in mind, like, he just missed the cut. Like, he just missed the cut to the point where when they wanted to have somebody in injury reserve for the gold medal game, Thompson was in the building in Boston as that guy. So, like, he was already on the cusp of making it, and I don't think he's done anything in the early part of the season for Buffalo to dissuade that.
One last one for you. The Buffalo Sabres. Because I know you're a Jets fan in football, so you know a thing or two about losing. What would you do if you're the Buffalo Sabres?
I mean, we have a... As a New York Jets fan, the Buffalo Sabres are winners. We have a longer playoff drought than they do, for God's sakes. I don't know, man. Like, again, it's just so frustrating to be having to have these conversations about this franchise yet again this season. They're dead last in the conference. They've, you know, minus 10 underwater on goal differential. Once again, getting, like you mentioned, good performances out of Tage Thompson. Alex Tuck is certainly singing for his supper from a contract perspective. And, you know, they did a pretty decent job getting it in their return for Paterka as Josh Doan, with increased ice time, has played pretty well for them. They had their season interrupted with the Rasmus Dahlin off the ice thing, which was unfortunate. And, you know, the goaltending remains kind of a chaotic mess, where, you know, for maybe 1 week there looks like there might be a solution, and then the next week you're like, well, we might as well just end the season now. They're just so disjointed. They've got some good pieces here and there, but I said this before the season about them. Like, at some point, you have to, like, you can't be a hen sitting on an egg for the rest of your life. Like, at some point, you have to take some of these younger players and package them together and get known quantities. You know, the Paterka situation, I think, was more along lines of he didn't want to play in Buffalo anymore, so they moved him. But, like, some of these other guys that have shown potential but haven't come, you know, found actuality for it in Buffalo, like, at some point, you have to turn those guys into other guys. And I wonder if that's going to be a Kevin Adams thing or if it's going to be whoever, succeeds him there. But it's just clearly a broken team right now.
Greg, as always, buddy, good stuff. We will chat with you again soon. We wait patiently for the announcement for both rosters. Although the way the injuries are going, somebody's going to get announced on the roster and then sadly will have to be replaced before the Olympics.
I mean, the optimist in me says at least Jack and Tkachuk and some of these other guys will be well rested for Italy, but that's probably not what their NHL teams have in mind.
Yeah, no, very true. That is Greg Wyshynski from ESPN.